The FBI is still gathering the facts about what happened in San Bernardino, but here's what we know. The victims were brutally murdered and injured by one of their co-workers and his wife. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers. So far, we have no evidence that the killers were directed by a terrorist organization overseas or that they were part of a broader conspiracy here at home. If we're to succeed in defeating terrorism, we must enlist Muslim communities as some of our strongest allies rather than push them away through suspicion and hate. Muslim Americans are our friends and our neighbors, our co-workers.
Together.
Radio.
We have audio, no video.
Radio Free Vida.
This is a pirate transmission from District 13 with a message.
Radio Free Readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Thank you for tuning in to episode 16, 2-9er, right here at the Voice of the American Redoubt. And I am John Jacob Schmidt. My name is your name too, if you're a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot. We are here to educate, to liberate, and proliferate, spreading truth and the message of freedom, Americanism, and liberty. So thank you guys all for being out there across the fruited plains. We are streaming right now to patriots everywhere. Thank you to our international listeners. And I haven't done this for a while. I want to salute those of you who are serving right now, whether you wear green or blue. Thank you guys so much for laying it on the line. Thank you for those of you who have taken your oaths seriously. You understand liberty. You're God-fearing, liberty-loving patriots, and you are serving, whether in the military or as law enforcement. Thank you guys for what you're doing, and also thank you so much for being patriots. I love hearing from those of you guys that are on the line, that are serving in the armed forces. I know you're out there. I hear from you guys. I know there's a lot of guys out there that just quietly, silently, secretly listen to Radio for Redoubt. But anyway, God bless you guys and your families who sacrifice so much and support you guys. Good. Some good folks out there. I know our government is trying to set things up to purge our military, to rid them of any patriots. That's happening in the ranks, too, in law enforcement. I understand you guys got to keep a low profile, but we know you're out there. We do hear from you guys, and you're in our prayers. I covered a bunch of stuff. Actually, yesterday was a great show on the American Christian Network, broadcasting across, 8, 9, 10 stations now across eastern Washington into northeast Oregon and north Idaho on the FM and the AM dial. So go to radioforredoubt.com, click on the listen, how to listen tab, that banner that's on the right-hand side toward the top. And that's all the different ways that you can listen, including our links to our pod. Somebody said, I missed the Podbean. Why don't you bring that back? And it never went away. It's still there. We upload every one of our shows to our Podbean player, which is linked in numerous places on the website. But also every show, as a reminder, every show that I do, we post a highlights and resources posting with that show title. Today's will be episode 16-29. And that covers all of the links to news articles and references, that everything that I talk about there, I try to. Every now and then I miss a couple, but I tried to put all the resources and links to everything that I discuss on the Highlights in Resources posting, including the embedded Podbean player that you can listen to that episode right there on that page. You can also click on the Podbean logo there on the player, and it will take you right to our main site where all of our podcasts and radio shows are uploaded to, for you to be able to download and listen to those. All right, because we've got so much to get into today, we are going to have a history lesson. I'm going to bring you some information from the 10th Amendment Center, from Chris Ann Hall, and from David Koppel over at the his history page. So I'm looking forward to that very much. That's at the he's the research director for the Independence Institute. And this is going to be kind of an amalgamation. I'm pulling several of these resources together. And I'm looking forward to that. It's very timely where we are now. A couple of weeks ago, we talked about the formation of militias again in the wake of people that want to start killing because of the color of their skin. There's people that want to kill white people, white police officers. And of course, they only represent a very small segment of Black America. But as we've already seen, they're going from rhetoric to direct action. And this is happening on the streets in America. We also have ISIS claiming they are going to shed blood in the streets, on the streets in America. Not just ISIS, but Islamic jihadists, no matter what their influence is. So this called for, or this resulted in the call for reinstituting the historical militias to provide for our self-defense. Now, that's not why they formed the militias. Well, actually, that's why they formed them initially. Their villages were being raided by Indians from the surrounding area. The French and Indian War precipitated a lot of violence that required each individual hamlet, township to form militias for their common defense. And the Founding Fathers talked about that too. And of course, once the British began their heavy-handed, tyrannous campaign against the colonists, well, that's when the militias really rose to the occasion. We're going to talk about that tonight, but I want to get through the news and commentary first, because there is a bunch of stuff that's very relevant to us. As God-fearing patriots, we should be watching very closely. The news and commentary is brought to you by Glenn Tate and the 299 Days book series about the collapse and the rebuilding. So go to 299days.com to learn more about that. Let's go to international news. Right now, Turkey is continuing with its purge. Now they've arrested 62 school children from the ages of 14 to 17 years old. Apparently, the legal defense is saying they were just given weapons and put in uniforms and given empty magazines and told to march around. Well, they got snatched up for treason during this attempted coup, or stemming from this attempted coup. Now there are approximately 50,000 people that have been sacked, removed, fired, arrested, detained. They really went after the education sector. Incredible what's happening over there now. And some folks said, yeah, we've got a global alarm now is growing as 50,000 citizens hit by Turkey purge. Turkey faced fresh accusations that it was flouting the rule of law with its purge of 50,000 people after an attempted coup, as the president gathered security chiefs Wednesday for the first time since the putsch. That's a real word, actually. That means a replacement, a forced overthrow is what it means. Authorities have rounded up or sacked tens of thousands of police, judges, teachers, and other civil servants from across the state bureaucracy in the aftermath of Friday's failed bid to seize power by disgruntled elements in the military. Disgruntled elements. Interesting. The purge has sparked an outpouring of global concern with none other than German Chancellor Angela Merkel's spokesman saying, "Nearly every day we are seeing new measures that flout the rule of law and that disregard the principle of proportionality." This is interesting. They are now claiming that they are very concerned that this president is flouting the rule of law. Let me take you back to a New York Times article. When the coup took place, Angela Merkel condemns the Turkish overthrow. She said, Chancellor Angela Merkel of Germany condemned the coup attempt in Turkey, saying that political change must take place through democratic procedures. But as she's admitting now, he is flouting the rule of law. How can you use democratic procedures, lawful democratic procedures, when the president is acting autocratic and outside the law? The very concern that she has that he is now acting outside the rule of law is what precipitated the coup in the first place. This is the reason for it. The same coup that she denounced, condemned. I've got several stories here. There's a story that came out earlier. It's like 2,330 ham radio licenses were revoked in part of this purge. And people, apparently, it seems that it's not true. I don't know where it started. I don't know who posted it. There were several sources that we had that all had various numbers, but listed ham radio operators as having their licenses revoked. Apparently, that's not entirely true, but it's plausible and believable because they're rolling up teachers, healthcare workers, media. They're shutting down. So it's a very believable, plausible story. But it seems now that we're getting stories, even the ARRL, the Amateur Radio Relay League, are saying they've checked, they've confirmed, and ham radio is alive and well in Turkey. It's not been shut down. They haven't had thousands of ham licenses revoked. But we'll continue to watch for that very closely, and we'll look for evidence of that we can vet and confirm. One person was killed tonight in Germany. At least 11 others were injured in an explosion at a restaurant in the German city of Ansbach, Sky News reports. The blast occurred at Eugene's Wine Bar. While initial reports said it was caused by a gas leak, Bavaria's interior ministry later clarified that the explosion was not an accident and appears to have been intentional. Ansbach Mayor Carta Seidel told the Nordbayern newspaper that the blast was caused by an explosive device. So Germany's really getting hit right now. The latest incident happened early Sunday in Germany in the city of Reutlingen in southern Germany, where a 21-year-old Syrian refugee used a machete to kill a pregnant woman and injure two others. German police said the stabber was a loan operator and that he had a dispute with the woman. So as far as any preliminary investigations are concerned, the stabbing did not bear the hallmarks of a terror attack. Really? It does too. Machete attack by a Syrian refugee. That does bear the hallmark of a terror attack, because we've seen this. Well, what happened on the train? Another hatchet attack? A 17-year-old Afghan refugee attacked train passengers near the city of Würzburg with an axe and a knife, seriously wounding three people. The teen, who reportedly shouted Allahu Akbar during the attack, was shot dead by police forces as he tried to flee the scene. Not to mention the Olympia shooting mall incident in Munich on Friday, killing nine people. 35 wounded, and eyewitness reports are stating that he was yelling Allahu Akbar when he did it, but they're saying, no, just keep walking, nothing to see here, because we've found no ties to Islamic State. So if a Muslim terrorist, if a Muslim yelling Allahu Akbar is killing people and we find he has no ties to Islamic State, it's not terrorism. No ties to terrorism because it's not Islamic State. Because that's the only organization, that's the only bona fide terrorist organization that you could belong to where we would declare it terrorism. Otherwise, it's just a rampage. Mindless people. I like the president of Hungary. And this has got the Europeans, just their heads are spinning like a top. Hungary's Prime Minister Viktor Orban said on Thursday that there is a clear link between illegal immigration to Europe and terrorist attacks on the continent. It's clear, quoting, he says, "It's clear as 2 and 2 makes 4. It is plain as day. There is an obvious connection," Orban told reporters after a meeting of the Visegrad 4 group of Central European leaders in Warsaw. He said, "If somebody denies this connection, then in fact, this person harms the safety of European citizens." Amen. Isn't it refreshing just having a leader just coming right out and saying what needs to be said? All right, we'll be back in just a minute. Fox 519, Eye in the Economy, coming at you right now.
You know, sometimes I plan to bring you the financial news, and I plan, and I plan, and then I see something like I'm going to bring you today. It's so poignant, so strong, that hardly any commentary needs to be added to it. It hit me to the core, and I hope it will do the same for you. Hello, everyone. This is Fox 519 here, bringing you the financial news and commentary that matters to your pocketbook as patriots and preppers. This is Eye on the Economy, brought to you by Radio Free Redoubt. Coffee. Imagine a morning without it. What does it feel like? Gray, dreary, foggy. Just can't seem to get your thoughts out? Well, there is a solution for that. You need Sisters Coffee Roasters. Sisters Coffee Roasters coffee comes in two forms. Green beans to roast on your own, or pre-roasted coffee that will wake up the senses and get you going. It will give you the energy to take on whatever your day throws at you. Remember, next time you're going to buy coffee, stop and think of SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Just like my friend Whiskey 62 says, Sisters Coffee Roasters coffee, it's what all the cool patriots drink. That's SistersCoffeeRoasters.com. Well, like I said in the intro, some news needs no commentary. Some does, some doesn't. Today is a different EOE that I'm going to bring you today. Something very important. It's a heartbreaking piece by Fabiola Zirpa. She's a reporter for Bloomberg who lives in Caracas, and for the last 30 days has made a journal of her efforts to provide food for her family during her country's financial collapse. As you listen, I want you to put yourself in her shoes. How would you handle this? What are you doing now? What are the holes in your plan? Ingest it and just think. Thursday, June 9th. My one chance in the week to buy Staples cooking for oil, rice, laundry detergent at set prices. All Venezuelan adults are assigned days of the week to shop for regulated goods based on the numbers on our national ID cards. My days are Sundays and Thursdays. Sundays are useless, though. Stores stopped selling regulated goods over the weekend a long time ago. Thursdays are marginally useful. For the past several months, the lines at the two supermarkets near my house in eastern Caracas have been so long, stretching out for two blocks or more, that it'd take hours to get a chance to shop. And then there's no guarantee I'll actually find anything inside. Still, I drive by the supermarkets in the morning to give them a quick look. No chance. They're so jam-packed, there isn't even a spot to park. I keep going. My reporting assignment on this day will take me to several parts of the city, so of course I'll be on the prowl for something, anything I can take back to my two kids, an 8-year-old boy and a 10-year-old girl, and my husband Isaac. I step into a pharmacy. Isaac is running severely low on his cholesterol medication. His doctor has prescribed him Viotrin or Hyperlipin. The store has neither. But wait, the pharmacist says. There's a lab in India that just cut a deal with the government to supply medicine here. They produce an anti-cholesterol pill. I really don't like the idea of all that who-knows-what-it-is stuff, but it's better, I figure, than taking the risk that he'll run out of his medication for good. I grab 4 boxes. Around midday, I swing by a bakery in search of bread. I'm greeted impatiently by a young woman. We only sell bread at 5 p.m., Signora. On my way out, I notice a sign on the front door that somehow I missed on the way in. It says, "No bread." As I get back in my car, I realize that I'm low on cash. I head to a nearby ATM. Surprise, it's out of money. But later, as my day's winding down, I stumble across a little treasure. At a local kiosk, I spot a generic, lactose-based product. It isn't quite milk, and it's almost impossible to find, but it's worth a try. Maybe the kids will like it. I walk away with 2 bottles in my hand and a huge smile on my face. June 14th. I'm in search of bread again, because it's becoming harder and harder to find fresh baked bread as Venezuelans have traditionally done. I decide to look for the packaged kind. At noon, I head to a nearby grocery store. There's no line outside. When I get inside, I see why. There's not too much on the shelf. And there's no sign of bread anywhere. "The bread arrived early, Signora," says a middle-aged store clerk. "It's all gone. I am sorry." Later on, I swing by a shopping center and I try to pay my electric bill. I'd pay online for internet service, but like everyone here in Caracas, that service has been spotty for months. The workers at the state-run utility are on strike today. There's no one around to receive my payment. "It's just today, Signora," a young woman tells me. "You can come back and pay tomorrow." I walk over to the supermarket next door. Top of my list now are vegetables and meat. I find vegetables, potatoes, onions, plantains, but there's no meat to be found. And I pay about twice as much as I had just 5 months earlier. As I head out, something catches my eye. There's over on the counter by the exit, far, far apart from the others, behind it, are several scarcer products in the city that are on display. Things like tuna fish, sugar, insecticide. But there's no taking chances with its precious staff. Buyers are instructed to put up the money before touching any of the merchandise. June 15th. On my way to work, I drive by a local supermarket to see if there's a line manageable enough to sneak in and look around. It's not. What's unusual about this morning, though, is that the municipal police officers who normally keep order on the lines aren't there. Instead, heavily armed officers from the National Guard's anti-kidnapping unit are on the scene. That seems a bit over the top. I keep on driving, opting to head back to the mall and try to pay my electric bill. Again, no luck. The strike is over, and I'm told, but the workers only arrive at noon. June 17th. Big score! Isaac, through a friend of a friend he works with and an ad production company, got his hands on 5 kilos of corn flour. This is huge. Flour is the main ingredient in arepas, the flat, round cornbread that's mostly the important staple diet in our Venezuelan dishes. Isaac paid dearly, though, 1,500 bolivars per kilo. That's 8 times more than the regulated price. It was worth it, though. Our supply was really running low. Replenish now, we can use some of it as bartering tool with friends and family. 2 kilos, for example, will go to my sister-in-law, Raquel, 2 days later in exchange for the powdered milk she passed on to us. June 25th. I head out to an early farmer's market near my house before dawn each Saturday. The farmer's trucks and their produce are coming in from the surrounding mountains. Everything's sold at free market prices, that is, technically speaking. Illegal, but essentially goes unenforced nowadays. Shopping here at these prices is a luxury that I know that millions of Venezuelans can't afford. I feel very fortunate to be in that sense. An additional perk is that the farmers actually accept debit cards. With inflation spiraling out of control, private forecasters for 2016 range from anywhere from 200% to 1,500%, with cash requiring toting around for the huge stack of bills. Not only it's cumbersome. In a country as crime-ridden as Venezuela, home to the world's 3rd highest homicide rate, it is extremely dangerous. After spending an hour picking out fruit, vegetables, and meat, I get in line to pay. It starts to rain, lightly at first, and then it pours. This is a problem. The internet system that links the debit card scanner to the banking sector crashes. Years of underinvestment have compromised the system's reliability. A half hour goes by. There are now 30 of us waiting to pay. Some start grumbling about the checkout clerk. They think she's lazy. And the banks, which they think are awful. And the country overall. This place is just one endless line. A couple of elderly men give up. Their wives cry. They put down their grocery bags and walk off. A few minutes later, I join them. Wow. Pretty powerful stuff, huh? What'd you think of that? As an alternative economist, this resonated with me so deeply that I wanted to make sure that every one of you heard this. Go find the article, and then read the rest. Folks, I can tell you that America is about to fundamentally change in ways you never thought possible. No matter who is elected this year, you have to be preparing. If you've slacked off, get back on the stick. Don't waste any more time, or you might have to live the life that Fabiola does, and we don't want that for you. Keep on prepping, and for Eye on the Economy and Radio Free Readout, this is Fox 519, signing off. God bless.
Welcome back. This is segment two at the Voice of the American Readout. My email is johnjacob@radiofreeredout.com. That's our website, radiofreeredout.com. And segment two is brought to you by SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com to help you get strategically relocated to the northernmost part of the panhandle of North Idaho. SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com, Patriot-owned business. Great, great folks. I actually got to have dinner with them the other night right before the Chris Ann Hall event in Sandpoint, Idaho. We had Representative Heather Scott there, had the folks from Readout News, Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Of course, Chris Ann joined us, and it was a great time, all being able to eat together and just talk and enjoy each other's fellowship. Good time. It was really, really cool. And then we all walked over to the event hall, and that was great, too. I'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later in the show. Somebody wrote a letter into me that suggested this. Instead of objecting to the infusion of refugees into our culture, why not change the calculus in a manner that demonstrates genuine concern for the refugees, by therefore resettling them in a culture more closely attuned to their native culture? We could do so at much lower cost, and that way, for every dollar, euro expended, we are able to help 5 or even 10 times the number we would otherwise. Do so in a manner that is less disruptive to their lives and ours, and nullify the argument that the motivation is racist. Okay, first of all, you're using logic. We are dealing with globalist liberals, and more importantly, the useful idiots with their little beaks in the air, gobbling up all of the Kool-Aid that the globalists and leftists are feeding them. Now, this is a logical argument. Why don't we just send Muslims who are fleeing persecution to Muslim nations where they will be able to be closer to home when things stabilize, they'll be able to return more easily? Well, there's two reasons. First of all, the other Muslim nations don't want them. They're rejecting them. They will not take them. Secondly, this is an agenda. It is called al-Hijra. Okay, so we need to call it what it is. We cannot care if they call us xenophobic or Islamophobic or hateful or racist, because just like the president in Hungary said, you got to call it like it is. There's a direct correlation. That's because this is an invasion by use of immigration. This is one of the strategies within Islam. Okay, now this argument would work well if you were talking to your liberal friend or a coworker. Okay, it will. This is a great argument, and it does cut the whole "I'm a racist, that's why I don't want him here" argument right out from under him. And first of all, Islam is not a race. So let's just get that out of the way. And it doesn't matter what you say, they're going to call you a racist anyway. They're going to call you hateful anyway. And even if you apply the argument, look, I care about these people. Why not make it better for them? It's better for us. Why is it better for us? Because you don't want them here because they're different. You're not going to win. This is one of those situations where you just have to, you're not going to make this logical argument with the people who matter. And the people who matter are the policymakers at the federal level and the United Nations. And they want to Islamify America. This is very strategic. So it's a great argument, but it's not going to hit home in the places where it needs to be heard and implemented. Let's just say that. That's about all I can say on that. We just have to simply say that it's oil and water. It's incompatible. Islam is incompatible with Americanism. They must displace. I'm gonna write up a whole presentation on this, dispelling some of these myths about, if you care about liberty, you can't just ban a religion. Okay, so I'm going to address that here in the very near future. Let's move on. Let's get over closer to America. Let's get into South America, Venezuela. Pregnant women, children, and even elderly Venezuelans are crossing into Colombia after the border was temporarily reopened, allowing them to buy basic foods and toiletries, rare commodities in their home country. The report states that tearful Venezuelans had gone weeks without basic food items like milk, flour, and toilet paper. It's a sad but common part of daily life today in crisis-ridden Venezuela, a country that has the world's largest proven reserves of oil. Colombian officials estimate about 100,000 Venezuelans crossed the border. Venezuela is expected to dive deeper into the abyss this year, according to new projections published last week by the International Monetary Fund. They're sitting on one of the largest, if not the largest, oil reserve known. There's no reason for people to starve. This is a demonstration of the utter failure of communism. Somebody put it really well. In communism, people stand in line and wait for your food. In capitalism, your food waits for you. And that's clearly what we're seeing right now. And we are going to see people standing in line, waiting for food in many places across the world, around the world, including America at some point, because the debt, $19 trillion, which is actually, with all of the other hidden debt, is actually close to $200 trillion. It's staggering. It's not even, you can't even use the word unsustainable for it anymore. It is suicidal to our republic when it comes full circle. So self-reliance, folks, as much as you can be self-reliant, there's no reason for anybody in the world to starve. If they are, it's because food is being used as a weapon. And here's the video clip was stated. The journalist said, "Politics isn't on the people's mind because their bellies are empty." Doesn't that summarize one of the main points that I've been saying for the last 5 years about why patriots need to be self-reliant? I'm not talking about being a prepper. Oh, a bunch of wild-eyed preppers waiting for the end of the world. Get that garbage out of your mind and out of your mouth. That's not what I'm talking about. These people cannot focus, and this is deliberate. You cannot focus on the political situation. You cannot be part of the solution. You cannot be effective. When you're starving and you're watching your children starve, when your daily mission is to find enough food to feed you to make it through the night, that's why we stress self-reliance. You take that completely out of the equation so you can stay focused on the issues, on redressing your grievances, on working within your community and your local government to reset things, to restore liberty and your values. Part of the process. That's why. Oh, what do we got here? Secretary of State John Kerry, in more evidence that we are losing, going mad. From the evidence of cultural insanity portion of the news, Secretary of State John Kerry said in Vienna on Friday that air conditioners and refrigerators are as big of a threat to life as the threat of terrorism posed by groups like Islamic State. The Washington Examiner reported that Kerry was in Vienna to amend the 1987 Montreal Protocol that would phase out hydrofluorocarbons, or HFCs, from basic household and commercial appliances like air conditioners, refrigerators, and inhalers. As we're working together on the challenge of ISIS and terrorism, Kerry said, it's hard for some people to grasp it, but what we, you, are doing here right now is of equal importance because it has the ability to literally save life on the planet itself. This is the head, one of the senior officials in a government that funds and forces the funding of murder of millions, and he's talking about saving lives, while their entire lifestyle produces the exact opposite results that they claim they are seeking in protecting the environment. How much jet fuel? Couldn't that have been done over the internet in a conference call on Skype? It could have gotten the same thing accomplished. Finally, real quick, let's run over to Turkey again. This article comes from Mike.com, M-I-C.com. Turkish protesters are spray painting 8888 and 8844 on walls. What does it mean? Well, as hard as the Turkish government might try, shutting down Twitter isn't as easy as it seems. At 11:30 p.m. Thursday, the Turkish government officially blocked the country's 33 million internet users from Twitter. But clever, tech-savvy Turks are sharing a simple and effective method to help fellow citizens bypass the ban, and they're sharing it everywhere. Just hours after the Prime Minister, Tayyip Erdogan, I got the correct pronunciation of that over on another document. Erdogan threatened, I've been calling him Erdogan, but I kind of like that better. We'll go with Erdogan for right now, just because I like it. I know that's not very Christian of me because it's kind of vindictive, but okay, Erdogan. Threatened to root out Twitter, graffiti has been popping up around Istanbul with two IP addresses that anyone can use to circumvent the government's ban. The two numbers, 8.8.8.8. and 8.8.4.4. Now, that's the static IP address, or also, well, basically known as a DNS, okay, which can be easily used to maintain access to Twitter. Now, survivalblog.com does the same thing. After several denial of service attacks on SurvivalBlog, James Rawls started posting their static DNS. You have to have a static IP to have a DNS, but we do have that with Radio Free Redoubt and Amron, but I don't have that. Shame on me. Something I'm going to fix right away. I have a text into codename Poly01. We're going to get from our server host our DNS. So you write those numbers down. If they block or reroute Radio Free Redoubt or Amron, you can use the DNS numbers, the IP addresses, to go directly. It's the numbers. It's like 24.6. Anyway, I'll get that for you guys. You guys, I don't want to talk about this again. The Attorney General ban on assault weapons unilaterally, overriding the legislature and just saying these are banned now. It doesn't matter if it doesn't have a flash suppressor or a collapsible stock or bayonet lug. From now on, if it's got the receiver and functions like a AR-15 or AK-47, it's banned. No more. From our Puerto Rican correspondent, Echo Base, sent this in. I'd like to keep you all informed that we are here in Puerto Rico on alert. Our government, together with the corrupt banker cartel, are threatening to spray the population of Puerto Rico with a very toxic pesticide called NALED, N-A-L-E-D. The people of Puerto Rico have expressed their concern on this possible chemical attack. We do not want to be sprayed. The after effects is what worries us. This chemical attack is also being pushed by the CDC. Our news reporters have investigated that CDC only is looking for funds that were denied by Congress and by exaggerating Zika as a threat here in Puerto Rico. They believe that they can scare Congress into releasing those funds. The Zika virus propaganda is an exaggeration. CDC and our corrupt government has destroyed commerce, and the tourists don't want to come to the island because of this exaggeration, this exaggerated Zika threat. There are efforts underway to work on an appeal for 77-year-old veteran Joe Robertson. I did an interview yesterday with Sherry from Readout News, who followed that case and was in Missoula during his sentencing. This is preposterous. The judge, obviously on a with a personal vendetta against Joe Robertson, they go back 10 years. Instructed, now that you're a felon, no firearms. You cannot even go into anyone's home for the rest of your life. He orders this from the bench. You cannot not even go into someone's home if they own a firearm. You can't be around somebody or ride in a car if they own a firearm. And check this out. I've never heard of this. This is beyond the pale. You cannot own any surveillance video systems. No video cameras. No electronic recording devices for life. How in the world does nobody even knows where this is coming from, but I'll tell you one thing. He's had U.S. Forest Service agents prowling around his property. He's caught them. What are you doing here? Get off my property. I have the right to be here. I'm with the federal government. You don't have a warrant. Get off my property. I don't need a warrant. I'm a federal agent. So he's filed complaints about the unlawful trespassing on his property without a warrant. And they want to make sure that he can't prove it. In the future, you cannot own any video cameras or any other surveillance equipment or electronic recording devices. How in the world is that even possible that a judge can order that? That was not even part of the case. It's irrelevant. Tyranny. I just hate bullies. All right, stay right there. We'll be right back in just a minute with segment three coming up here at the Voice of the American Readout. Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real-life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Hi, I'm Chris Walsh, broker and owner of Revolutionary Realty, based in the heart of America's great redoubt, North Idaho. Every day, I sell homes and land to bankers, doctors, economists, scientists, military folks, and more for good reason. They all know what's coming and want to secure safety and peace for their family. They've done the research and discovered that North Idaho's superior environment, food insecurity, surrounded by more like-minded patriots than anywhere in America. At www.revrealty.us, you can read stories about North Idaho's weather, spring development, growing food, solar, and alternative energy. Additionally, every article has a beautiful quote from the brilliant mind of Thomas Jefferson. We also give you free access to our listings, so feel free to browse our inventory or fill out our short form, and we'll do the searching for you. Call a revolutionary today at 208-667-1776 or visit us online at revrealty.us. That's www.revrealty.us, and God bless you.
Welcome to segment three here at the Voice of the American Readout. And sorry about that. I realized I had my studio speakers on, and I couldn't figure out where I was getting this kind of an echoey, open echo room sound, and that's what it was. So I just turned those down. So that should improve your listening experience just a little bit. Segment three is brought to you by Katie Armor, C-A-T-I, Armor. With your body armor needs, with front and back and side plates, level 3A body armor. And they also have the soft armor. Free shipping on all of those orders with a turnaround of less than a week. Go to katiearmor.com for more. Now, as I mentioned, this weekend we went to a... First, I want to remind you guys, we are still the Underground Project. We're selling the Underground Project thumb drives. Those are $15 at the Readout Gear Store, and we are taking all of the proceeds from the sales from the month of July, and we're donating that equally to two organizations that are working with the Underground Church overseas. Voice of the Martyrs, Covert Operations, specifically works with smuggling Bibles, audio Bibles, and radios, transistor radios, shortwave radios, into, and they also smuggle Christians out of those areas. But their primary focus is to get Bibles, audio Bibles, and radios smuggled into areas where Christianity is banned and their home group leaders need support. The other one is rescuechristians.org. Rescue Christians works with the Underground Church, smuggling Christians out of areas where they are being persecuted, hunted by their governments and their communities. They purchase the freedom of many people, including women who have been Christian women who have been forced into prostitution. They can buy the women, and they'll buy them and smuggle them out of there. And they're just doing a lot of really critical work for the body of believers. These are people that are working in the Underground Church right now, today, while the Underground Project that we produced, that was designed to prepare for the Underground in the future, some point in America, and on the hypothetical, you know, scenario of Chinese invading our country and banning all non-sanctioned churches. What would you do if your pastor decided to go underground? How would you do that step by step? Well, this is a reality for people living around the world. So in the month of July, we are donating all of the proceeds equally between those two ministries. Now, as I mentioned, this week on Friday night, went to Sandpoint, Idaho, to hear Chris Ann speak. And this particular presentation is about the parallels between the time of our nation's founding and today, when a governor declares arms to be illegal. Interesting. I learned a lot of, well, I'm always learning something new, but I learned some new things that I didn't know before. If you have not gotten that presentation in your community, if she's speaking somewhere near you, get it. Get in front of her and get this information. Of course, she's also got resources, but I'm going to share with you some stuff that she covered, and also the 10th Amendment Center has covered, the New American has covered, several. And there's an article here that I want to share with you right after the break here in just a minute. But remember what I said, we've got to return to our heritage. You cannot restore your heritage. Or let me ask you this, how can you restore your heritage if you don't know what it is? How can you demand that the government follow the rule of law if you don't know what the rule of law is? How do you know the way things are today aren't the way they're supposed to be? Because if you don't know your history, and you don't know your heritage, how can you know that they've veered off course? All you can stand on is, well, I just don't like the way things are. But to really stand on the fact that they are acting unlawfully, and the same exact same thing that the Founding Fathers were faced with a government that was acting unlawfully, how they dealt with it. So anyway, you're going to learn some things. There's some resources that I want to share with you. Write these down, and I want you to commit yourselves over the next 3 months to returning to your history and heritage and learning where we came from. It's going to be critical in the coming months and years. Start now. You're behind the curve if you have not already begun. ChrisAnnHall.com. constitutional attorney, goes into the constitutional history, the history of all of our founding documents. It will completely change your mindset about the Constitution and where we are and where we came from. Another one, for the same reasons, and we play their podcast right before Radio Free Readout every Sunday, but you can go to wallbuilders.com, W-A-L-L, builders, wallbuilders.com. And so much about your history. Start becoming a sponge, a information educational sponge for your heritage and your history. The more you get, the more you'll crave, and the more you'll be angry about what they've turned our country into. It is nothing like, you say America's going to be gone. America is already gone. The only reason why it's not gone is because it still exists. That fire still burns in the bosom of patriots across the country, but not enough. And the patriots that are there are not educated anywhere near where they need to be to firmly stand on these principles. Not just because I don't want you to take my guns because I like my guns and so there. You need to know why. Not just guns. It's the freedom of religious liberty is on the line right now. Freedom of speech, freedom to assemble, freedom to petition your government. All of these things are on the line. Search and seizure laws, the Fourth Amendment, the Fifth Amendment, the Sixth Amendment, they're all going down. The other one is the 10th Amendment Center, which I'm going to read you an article from them tonight in our history lesson. 10thAmendmentCenter.com. And you spell that out, T-E-N-T-H, 10thAmendmentCenter.com. The other one that I am personally getting involved in, and I've heard about for a long time, I've heard people talk to me about it, I've read a little bit about it, but the testimonies are irrefutable. And this is where people are coming to me saying, who have taken the Center for Self-Governance courses and said it completely spun their head like a top. It opened their eyes. It was a watershed moment in their walk as patriots, as Christian patriots in our country, and their knowledge and understanding of our heritage and where we came from. This is self-empowering, which is the biggest threat to tyrants. Is it self-awareness and self-empowerment, especially self-governance? Center for Self-Governance.com has classes going on all across the country. And we talk about the strategy of changing your country, your nation at the local level. I'm telling you, this is not my opinion. It's fact. The only solution, the only way we're going to be able to take back America as Christian patriots is not Washington, D.C. It is at the local and, for some of us, the state levels. That's the only way. That's the strategy. That's the way forward. And at the grassroots level, the left is already doing this. The communists are onto this, and that's where they are targeting. We're behind the curve, patriots. But you have power at your fingertips you've not tapped into and don't realize it. I just signed up for my first class, which is the state level constitution, which is a 400. It's a C400 class. And I'm going to take the C500 state constitution remaining articles class. I'm going to take every single one of these courses. I want to urge you to as well. Most of these are level one through level five, are all done in person. The other one, the 100, 200, 300, 400, 500, those are online classes. These others are done in person. And it's critical, absolutely critical for the time that we're in. Okay, history lesson. When we come back, I'm going to share something with you from the 10th Amendment Center. So stay tuned. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and this is Radio Free Readout. Thank you.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. Well, now that the election results are official, I want to say thank you. I could not have achieved an overwhelming 15 percentage point victory without all of you. Together, we challenged the status quo and sent a strong message to those who compromise on principle that wavering is not a strategy, it's wholesale surrender. And surrender will not restore freedom, liberty, and prosperity to our state. The path to freedom means fighting tooth and nail for lower taxes and less government, and being uncompromising on the rights to life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. It means defending the Constitution and building coalitions around issues of principle. Together, we will continue to push forward the freedom agenda and the values that made America and Washington great. Please visit us and like us on Facebook at Freedom Agenda Washington and watch for actions you can take to help us clear the path to freedom. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the committee who elect Matt Shea Republican.
As water continues to become more highly regulated, will you have the legal right to use the water on your own property? When the grocery store shelves are empty, will you have sufficient quantities of food being produced on your property to sustain your family year after year? Strategic Landscape Design offers design and consulting services that can make the answers to these life-sustaining questions a resounding yes. They offer water rights permitting assistance for resources such as creeks, ponds, irrigation, and hydroelectric power, plus permaculture design for perennial gardens and energy-efficient greenhouses to produce enough food to feed your family all year long. Strategic Landscape Design is a Patriot-owned business located in the heart of the American Redoubt. Go to www.strategiclandscapedesign.com to learn more. This is segment four, brought to you by Works Holsters, custom-made Kydex holsters made right here in the American Redoubt by Christian Patriot-owned business with a lifetime guarantee on all their products. And of course, they make holsters and mag pouches with a lead time of less than 2 weeks. Don't forget to use your coupon code RFR on your next order. Now, I want to give you a history lesson here. This is from the 10th Amendment Center. I'm going to read, I'm going to comment in a few places here. Now, you could just read it for yourself. You don't need to be read to, but I'm running into some people that are like, I don't listen to podcasts. I'll read it, but I can't sit there. I don't have the time to listen. Other people, I was told, no, I need to, can you cover that on your show? Because I don't read. I cannot make myself sit still and read, but I'll listen to podcasts. I listen to tons of podcasts. I listen to them while I'm driving. So, okay. For those of you that like to read and prefer to read, I'm going to link this article from the 10th Amendment Center who references Koppel's article from history. Now, what I'm talking about here is David Koppel's article. So many historical references. It's so good. But he's the research director from Independence Institute. And I am going to read this. Well, the 10th Amendment Center's article references this paper he did on our early republic, how we came about. Particularly this one, and the American Revolution against British gun control. So let me get into this. When people think of the causes of the American War for Independence, they think of slogans like, no taxation without representation, right? Or the cause célèbre like the Boston Tea Party. In reality, however, what finally forced the colonials into a shooting war with the British Army in April of 1775 was not taxes or even warrantless searches of homes and their occupation by soldiers, but one of many attempts by the British to disarm Americans as a part of an overall gun control program, according to David Koppel. Chris Ann Hall covered this and the sequence of events. There were some things that I didn't realize how General Gage had attempted to disarm the people on a couple of occasions, and the response, it just didn't click with me. but we're going to cover this right now. Furthermore, had the American colonies lost their war for independence, the British government intended to strip them of all their guns and place them under the thumb of a permanent standing army. In his paper titled How British Gun Control Program Precipitated the American Revolution, Koppel claims that various gun control policies by the British following the Boston Tea Party, including a ban on firearm and gunpowder importation, tells us not only the purpose of the Second Amendment, but its relevance within the context of today's gun control debate. Keep in mind, this all went down in Massachusetts, where someone unilaterally declared these guns to be illegal in Massachusetts just this week. Arms for the citizens to be able to defend themselves. The ideology underlying all forms of American resistance to British usurpations and infringements was explicitly premised on the right of self-defense of all inalienable rights. From the self-defense foundation was constructed a political theory in which the people were the masters and government the servant, so that the people have the right to remove a disobedient servant. You getting this? You're going to learn this kind of stuff through the Center for Self-Governance. And you're going to learn this stuff through learning your history. The philosophy wasn't novel, but it was directly derived from the political and legal philosophers such as John Locke, Hugo Grotius, and Edward Coke. Koppel writes that two important things underlined the American response to the British policies. One was the practical concept of self-defense, which British disarmament measures was making more difficult. And the other and more relevant concept was that Americans made no distinction between self-defense against a lone criminal or against a criminal government. Now, following the Boston Tea Party in December of 1773, in which the Sons of Liberty boarded three ships carrying East India Company cargo and dumped 46 tons of tea to prevent its landing. So, British government introduced a series of retaliatory measures known as the Intolerable Acts. Among the actions was the closure of Boston's port, effectively cutting off all trade. However, Koppel writes, it was the possibility that the British might deploy the army to enforce them, the Intolerable Acts, that primed many colonists for armed resistance. An example of this is a South Carolina newspaper essay reprinted in Virginia that urged that, listen to this, any law that had to be enforced by the military was necessarily illegitimate. Listen to that. If they pass a law onto a people whose government is supposed to be a people of the people, by the people, and for the people, if they have to use force and coercion to get the people who the government is a servant of, to get the people to comply with a law, then that law is necessarily illegitimate. If you have to force people, if you have to pin them down and shove the medicine down their throats against their will, that by default makes the law illegitimate. Listen to this quote from this paper that was this article that was reprinted in Virginia. When an army is sent to enforce laws, it is always an evidence that either the lawmakers are conscious that they had no clear and indisputable right to make those laws, or that they are bad and oppressive. Wherever the people themselves have had a hand in making laws, according to the first principles of our Constitution, there is no danger of non-submission, nor can there be need of an army to enforce them. If the will of the people is there, then you don't need to force it upon them. There won't be non-submission. So if you must enforce it on the people by force and coercion, that inherently is a illegitimate law to go against the will of the people like that. The British Army had already been occupying American cities like Boston since 1768, where the notorious Boston Massacre took place. Tensions were so great that the shooting might have started much earlier than Lexington and Concord. In one incident, General Gage sent redcoats to squash an illegal town meeting in Salem. And this is what Chris Ann was referring to, that this General Gage got put in charge to get these colonists under control. So he declared that you can only meet once a year, and then you had to inform him of when you're meeting, who's going to meet there, what you're going to discuss, and then he had to approve of it. So any other meeting was illegal. This is why the First Amendment, the right to peaceably assemble, was put in the First Amendment. General Gage sent redcoats to squash an illegal town meeting in Salem, only to retreat when, according to one of Gage's aides, 3,000 armed Americans arrived. Then the federal government started backpedaling. Well, that's going to make them mad. It was clear to the British that the gun control measures would be necessary if they were to maintain their rule. Gage had only 2,000 troops in Boston, while there were thousands of armed men in Boston and more in the surrounding area. One solution, Copel writes, was to deprive the Americans of gunpowder. So we're going to go after the ammunition. No, you can keep your guns. And this is where they want to pass that like 10,000% sales tax on ammunition. And even now, our government has banned the importation of a lot of ammo and certain firearms. In September 17, and this is what the British did, they banned the importation. Now they're eyeballing the ammunition the powder magazines, also known as powder houses. Let me read on. In September 1774, several hundred redcoats raided a Charlestown powder house, those are also known as magazines, where militias and merchants stored their gunpowder due to its volatile nature, and seized all but the powder belonging to the colonial government. Gage was within his legal rights to seize it, Copel concludes, but the seizure still incensed the public. Known as the powder alarm, this also nearly started the revolution when rumors spread wildly that the redcoats had started shooting. In response, 20,000 militiamen were mobilized that same day and marched on Boston. They later turned around once they learned the truth, that no shots had been fired. Can you imagine that today? Forces were being used to oppress someone, to disarm them. 20,000 militiamen were mobilized in a day and started converging on a location. See, we got a problem in our country where we cannot even reasonably expect that 20,000, much less a 10% of that, would show up if someone was being oppressed. 20,000 militiamen. The powder house, also magazine, is near the north edge of this. They have a map here. He said, if the British used violence to seize arms or powder, the Americans would treat that seizure as an act of war, and the militia would fight. And that is exactly what happened several months later on April 19th, 1775. Following the powder alarm, the militia of the towns of Worcester County assembled at the Worcester Common, Worcester Convention ordered the resignations of all militia officers who had received their commissions from the royal governor. The officers promptly resigned and then received new commissions from the Worcester Convention, independent of the British administration. Governor Gage then tried another approach, warrantless searches of people for arms and ammunition without any provocation. The policy drew fierce criticism for the colonists. In fact, the Boston Gazette wrote that of all General Gage's offenses, it was this one that outraged the people the most. Can you imagine having highway checkpoints to search for firearms? I mean, they're already conditioning the people to do it. Warrantless searches of people and their vehicles right now. But see, right now it's just for DUI. Safety checkpoint. Make sure all your seatbelts work. You know, it's for your own good. But still, without a warrant. No probable cause to believe that you've committed a crime and searching you. So here we are
240 years ago, carrying out warrantless searches looking for arms and ammunition. In October of 1774, the Provincial Congress convened, with John Hancock acting as its president. The Congress adopted a resolution that condemned the military occupation of Boston and called on private citizens to arm themselves and engage in military drills. So what would happen in Massachusetts, I wonder, I'm thinking out loud, if this attorney general in Massachusetts puts out the word this week that all of these copycat AR-15, AK-47 variants, any combat rifle, would be banned? What would happen if the Patriots in Massachusetts today immediately began doing drills, military drills, in the public square? The Provincial Congress also appointed a committee of safety, giving it the power to call up the militia. See the hierarchy here? There's accountability, there's structure, there's a chain of command. This meant that the militia of Massachusetts no longer answered to the British government, Copel writes. It was now the instrument of what was becoming an independent government of Massachusetts. Let me draw a parallel for today. Right now, a lot of these militias operate as what they self-declare as constitutional militias. Many of the states have constitutional provisions for militias. This would be the equivalent of a militia in a state who says, we answer to the sheriff if there's an emergency and he calls up and needs help, we'll respond. If the governor calls up, because that's what our constitution says, the governor may call on the militia. So that's who we answer to. And this was the case back then. But only you and I both know that in a real-world emergency, the most sheriffs, and I don't think there's a single governor that would say, we need some militia here. We need more. No, we're gonna pull in UN troops, the professionals. We're gonna bring law enforcement from all these other jurisdictions to come here to help with our regional emergency. That's what we'll do. We know militias. No, stay home. We don't want somebody getting hurt. This is something that professionals need to be involved in, right? But I digress. So this would be the modern day equivalent of a governor declaring guns to be removed. And also, as the militia starts training, he goes and he pulls the legitimate covering from the militias who say, we're a constitutional militia. We answer to the government. We answer to the sheriff in times of need. Now these very people are instruments of tyranny. They're planning to disarm Americans. So they strip you of your militiahood. So what you do is you fall under another civil body politic made up of legislators, grassroots leaders, people, influential people in your community, and they form a committee of safety. So that there's discipline, there's a chain of command, there's oversight and accountability. And that's who the militia answers to. And that's where you get your legitimacy from, that civil body politic, which then would recommission those officers in the militia who no longer answer to the British or the governor, because the governor is an instrument of this tyranny. Now, not surprisingly, back to this, British officials in England were eager to see outright gun confiscation in order to effectively suppress any resistance to their rule. Sound familiar? Lord Dartmouth, the Royal Secretary of State for America, articulated this sentiment in a letter to Governor Gage. He says, amongst other things which have occurred on the present occasion as likely to prevent the fatal consequences of having recourse to the sword, that of disarming the inhabitants of the Massachusetts Bay, Connecticut, and Rhode Island has been suggested. Whether such a measure was ever practicable, or whether it can be attempted in the present state of things, you must be the best judge. But it certainly is a measure of such a nature as ought not to be adopted without almost a certainty of success, and therefore I only throw it out for your consideration. In other words, if you think you can pull this off, go for it. But I think it should happen, but only if you you're sure you can do it. Gage warned, General Gage warned, that the only way to carry it out would be to use violence. He says, your lordship's idea of disarming certain provinces would doubtless be consistent with prudence and safety, but it neither is nor has been practicable without having recourse to force and being masters of the country. In other words, we're going to pull this off, we're going to have to come on fast, hard, and strong. Remember, history repeats itself. When things come full circle, this is the discussion that's going to be taking place. They're not going to talk citizen, well, maybe in Massachusetts. I mean, we saw pictures of them lined up to turn their guns in or register them. The gun confiscation proposal didn't remain secret for long, as Gage's letter, read in the British House of Commons and then publicized in America, 2 days after Dartmouth's letter was sent, King George III ordered the blocked importation of arms and ammunition to America, save those with government's permits. No permit, Copel writes, was ever granted, and the ban would remain in effect until after the War of Independence ended and the Treaty of Paris was signed in 1783. Just like those of you living in the People's Democratic Republic of California, if you live in a county that says, no, we have concealed weapons permits here, you just got to fill out the paperwork, you got to go through the sheriff, and he's got to approve it. Only nobody ever gets approved, unless you're a movie star, or a politician, or a politician's bodyguard. But other than that, no, citizens, uh-uh. Oh yeah, we have provisions. We have concealed weapons permits. We just never issue one, but we have it. So, having banned the import on all guns and ammunition, the British moved next to seize that which remained in colonial hands. Why am I reading this to you? Because I'm telling you the future. Let that sink in. Having banned the import on all guns and ammunition, the British moved next to seize that which remained in colonial hands. In anticipation of such a seizure at Fort William and Mary in December of 74, 400 New Hampshire patriots preemptively captured all the material at the fort. Eventually, Copel writes, Americans no longer recognized the royal governors as the legitimate commanders-in-chief of the militia. So, without formal legal authorization, Americans began to form independent militia outside the traditional chain of command of the royal governors. This is the same militia that the Founding Fathers had in mind when they wrote the Constitution, by the way. It was such a militia that assembled at Lexington Green and Concord against Gage's Redcoats in April of 1775. Following the battle, the colonials lay siege to Boston. The British response in other colonies was a swift move to confiscate or destroy firearms. In Virginia, they seized 20 barrels of gunpowder from the public magazines in Williamsburg and removed the firing mechanisms in the guns, making them impossible to shoot. And this is when the patriots marched on Gage, saying, with thousands, saying, we want our stuff back now. Many gun control policies of America today follow the British blueprint. The Federal Gun Control Act of 1968, for example, prohibits the import of any firearm which is not deemed suitable for sporting purposes by federal regulators. Certain cities openly declare their gun fees are intended not to prevent the wrong people from owning guns, but to discourage all private citizens from owning them. To the Americans of the Revolution and the Founding Era, Copel writes, the late 20th century claim that the Second Amendment is a collective right and not an individual right might have seemed incomprehensible. The Americans owned guns individually in their homes. They owned guns collectively in their town armories and powder houses. They would not allow the British to confiscate their individual firearms or their collective arms. And when the British tried to do both, the revolution began. Yet Copel believes the most important lesson for today from the revolution is about militaristic or violent search and seizure in the name of disarmament. Something that occurred in the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina. Local law enforcement confiscated firearms many times at gunpoint. A federal district judge properly issued an order finding the gun confiscation to be illegal. Gun ownership, simpliciter, ought never to be a pretext for government violence. The Americans in 1775 fought a war because the king did not agree. Americans of the 21st century should not squander the heritage of constitutional liberty bequeathed by the patriots. It's easy to see then why modern gun control advocates are the spiritual successors of the British government our forefathers opposed. For while gun grabbers call for restrictions on the right to private citizens to keep and bear arms, they are all but silent on the dangers of having a standing army in America or the blatant militarization of police departments. Their reason for disarming American citizens today is the same as that of the British in the 1770s. Very good. I am also going to post to davecopel.org. That is the website. There's so much history and heritage there. Great writer, great researcher, great historian. And that's another resource for you. Save the whole thing. Save the whole website as HTML, each of these articles. This is part of your heritage. Something that we should read and reread and really sink in. Lots more. So there's your history lesson for tonight. And like Chris Ann Hall said, history does repeat itself. Things come back around. So if you want to know what's coming down the line, read your history. And not the rewritten, revised history either. Anyway, with that, you have a blessed week. This is John Jacob Schmidt, and you've been listening to the Voice of the American Redoubt. Good night.